all new rewiring, new windows.
These wood planks on the floor, are they original?
This is all original.
How long has the renovation been going on?
About 13 years now. We are funded by just the public fundraisers. No loans, no grants, just whatever we can fundraise.
So it's all local involvement.
All local.
Is there any kind of sense of how long the renovation will go on before they...
We've been hoping that we should be finally done with this main floor within 5 years. We're hoping to have walls and everything within 2.
Oh, okay. It's a beautiful old building.
Sure enough, I find Creston's commemorative Lincoln Highway mural right on Main Street. Old guys in hats leaning up against a white water fountain.
Well, here's what it says. Illinois was the only state to have Lincoln Highway drinking fountains. They were donated by Carl Parker in memory of his mother, Amanda Sutherland Parker, who had grown up in the Garden Plain area of Whiteside County. Originally, the fountains were to be placed every 10 miles across Illinois. This was not practical because of water supply, so fountains were donated to the towns and cities. 17 fountains were donated, and the 1914 progress report states that nine of them were then being placed. I think that has a typo on the sign. Progress report states that 9 of them were then being placed. I don't know. All right.
Heading east now, I didn't have the trouble Emily Post did when she handwrote on her map, bad road if wet. But I didn't find it all that comfortable on a bicycle either. I wouldn't recommend this stretch of Lincoln Highway on a bicycle. The shoulder is either gravel or non-existent, the trucks and cars go by very quickly, and they all seem unaware of the 3-foot berth rule for bicycles in Illinois. They don't seem all that much into sharing the road. To my left on this very cold afternoon, I started to see the wind turbines just across Interstate 88, the second location on the route where our energy concerns shape the skyline. And then, just west of Malta, I pedaled onto history. Like Richard Burton, who led the team that found the source of the Nile River in 1858, on the first day of spring in 2013, I find the legendary first seedling of the Lincoln Highway, the exact spot where the very first cement mile on the very first transcontinental highway was poured. Because the Lincoln Highway Association didn't have funds for the whole project, it concentrated instead on these seedling miles, stretches of road from which the highway itself might grow like the flora it was paving over. 10 feet wide and 1 mile long, the cement stretch was so successful that people traveled literally for hours just so they could brag about having driven from one end of the cement mile to the other. I find it an unassuming spot for one with such weighty import. Marked by only a single sign, it's just directly across from Kishwaukee College's baseball diamond, with its enormous black netting rising several stories in the air. It isn't hard to imagine that the foreboding scrim was placed there for the sole purpose of keeping excited hordes of curiosity seekers from rushing out onto the highway to see this concrete Magna Carta, although its actual use is to keep foul balls from going through windshields. A few feet away on Malta Road, in the parking lot of Kishwaukee College, is the commemorative gazebo. It has red, white, and blue bunting and a large plaque, still readable, even though plows had pushed a mound of snow in front of it. This seemed like as good a place as any to end my bicycle journey, right on the spot that birthed the long-distance car ride. But just as I'm about to pedal home, I get one more surprise.
First of all, tell me what your name is.
They call me Willie, but I'm Bill.
Okay. And you guys are with the Illinois Department of Transportation, right?
Right.
And what are you guys doing out here today?
We're patching the road surface, potholes, fixing all the white lines.
And how would you say this road compares to other roads that you guys work on?
It's actually pretty good shape. This is a newer substructure, and it's highly maintained. It's pretty much a good road to travel.
This is a nice reminder that with a little maintenance and care, America's oldest highway should be around to serve as a viable traffic artery, as well as a living historical artifact for decades to come.
That's Dan Libman, and we will post the entire Lincoln Highway series on our website this afternoon, will.illinois.edu. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Chris Berube. Studies show that when participation in a retirement plan is automatic, more people end up saving money. I mean, that makes sense. So President Obama has proposed automatic IRAs for some employees, a version of which was adopted in California. But business groups argue that requiring employers to implement this plan is really not the right way to go. NPR's Ina Jaffe reports.
California State Senator Kevin DeLeon sponsored the automatic IRA bill. The inspiration, he says, was his aunt Francisca.
She's assaulted the earth. She's my second mother. She was a woman who put the food on the table, who made me dinner and breakfast, and she's still a housekeeper in the wealthiest enclaves in America.
And she's 74 years old.
And I send her a check, you know, on a monthly basis, and she receives her Social Security check, but simply not enough for her to pay her rent, to put the food on the table, to pay for her medication.
California's automatic IRA hasn't gone into effect yet. A lot of kinks have to be ironed out. But basically, it would work like this. 3% of a worker's paycheck would automatically be sent to a conservatively managed retirement fund, though who will be in charge of it hasn't been determined yet. Employers wouldn't have to do anything but deduct and forward the money the same way they handle taxes. A worker who didn't want to participate could opt out. But that automatic enrollment is the key, says Richard Thaler, a behavioral economist at the University of Chicago.
The only way most humans are able to save for retirement regularly is by having money taken out of their paycheck before they get a chance to spend it. That's old-fashioned wisdom that is still true.
And studies back it up. When participation in a retirement plan is automatic, more people save.
The differences are quite dramatic. In a company that has a 401k plan, most people figure out eventually that it's a good idea to join, but some people just never get around to it. If they are automatically enrolled, sign-up rates are over 90%.
The idea for the automatic IRA has been floating around in policy wonk circles since 2006, and it's been part of the Obama administration's budget every year since he was elected. In his first term, it took a backseat to health care reform. But at a recent congressional hearing, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew touted the idea as a way to get people to save more.
One way to put that carrot out there would be to have auto IRAs where people are automatically signed up and opt out so that more people end up getting in the practice of saving for their retirement.
And most people agree that saving for retirement is a good thing.
However, we think creating a mandate for employers is not the right way to go.
Aaliyah Wong is the executive director of retirement policy at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. She says there's another reason that the chamber opposes the Obama administration's proposal. It would require each employer to pick a company to manage the IRA. She says that makes employers legally vulnerable.
The worker 20 years down the road looks back and says, well, I don't think that was a good investment or I could have earned more. And whether or not it's a viable claim, once they bring that claim, you've already started the cost of having to fight that.
Nevertheless, about a dozen states have taken a look at starting automatic IRAs. They're attractive because they're true individual retirement accounts, not public pensions. The taxpayer's not left holding the bag. California Senator Kevin DeLeon believes it's more likely that automatic IRAs will be adopted by the states rather than by Congress.
Washington, D.C. right now, it's difficult to get things done right now, and there's a lot of dysfunction there.
But lawmakers in Washington and in state capitals may want to see how California's experiment works out before taking action. And the law probably won't take effect before early 2015. Ina Jaffe, NPR News.
WILL programs are made possible by Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal in Champaign. Eastern Rug Gallery offers professional cleaning and repair service for Oriental and other handmade rugs, and provides repair and restoration services for fringe and sides, holes, rips, and animal stains.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 1st of May, 2013. It was on this date in 1840 the first official adhesive postage stamp was issued. In Great Britain, up until then, the recipient of a letter paid for the postage. But many people refused, and the calculation of postage had to be figured out, number of sheets of paper, the distance between sender and recipient. And with the adhesive postage stamp, the sender paid, and there was one price. Queen Victoria's picture was on the stamp, and because Britain was the first to use postage stamps, they've never put the name of the country on them, just a picture of the reigning monarch. It's the birthday of Joseph Addison, Wiltshire, England, 1672, along with his friend Richard Steele. Addison was an essayist for the newspaper The Tatler and then The Spectator, essays that aimed to, he said, enliven morality with wit and to temper wit with morality. 1707 on this date, the Acts of Union joined the kingdoms of England and Scotland into the kingdom of Great Britain. They'd had a single monarch for 100 years since Queen Elizabeth I died childless. James VI of Scotland became James I of England. The Acts of Union combined their two parliaments into one. It's the birthday of Bobby Ann Mason, born Mayfield, Kentucky, 1940, raised on a dairy farm. Wrote her Ph.D. dissertation on Nabokov, and then set out to write something completely different. She said, "Since Huckleberry Finn, or thereabouts, it seemed that all American literature was about the alienated hero. I was sick of reading about the alienated hero. I'm more interested in people in the mainstream." So she wrote about rural and small-town people in Kentucky. Her first collection was Shiloh and Other Stories. Her first novel was In Country. Her most recent, The Girl in the Blue Beret. It's the birthday of Terry Southern, born Alvarado, Texas, 1924, who wrote the screenplay Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And it was on this date, 1931, the Empire State Building opened to the public. Here's a poem for today by Paul Zimmer, A Final Affection. I love the accomplishments of trees, how they try to restrain great storms and pacify the very worms that eat them. Even their deaths seem to be considered. I fear for trees, loving them so much. I am nervous about each scar on bark, each leaf that browns. I want to lie in their crotches and sigh, whisper of sun and rains to come. Sometimes on summer evenings I step out of my house to look at trees propping darkness up to the silence. When I die, I want to slant up through those trunks. So slowly I will see each rib of bark, each whorl, up through the canopy, the subtle veins and lobes touching me with final affection. Then to hover above and look down one last time on the rich upliftings, the